True, true. She said they're just starting her rehearsals for a new version of Jesus Christ Superstar here at the Alliance that she will be in. So stay tuned. We'll let you know. Maybe we'll get 200 tickets and all go together or something. Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be great? Whenever I ask people how they became interested in spirituality or metaphysics, the most common answer I receive seems to be because I lost interest in traditional religion. I know that's true for a lot of us. Some of us lost interest because we felt abused or criticized for our lifestyle or our past, while some of us simply were not being fed. We didn't feel like the message that we were hearing, whether it was Sunday or in class, was helping us to grow, and we didn't feel like the message we were hearing was helping us to get closer to spirit, a closer connection with that inner something. So we turned away from mainstream religion and dogma, and we began to explore different spiritual philosophies that allowed us a little more latitude in what we believed and how we chose to express that belief. And in the process of doing it, some of us began to wonder out loud how anyone could possibly remain attached to what we affectionately call that old-time religion, which only goes to show there's a little bit of judgment left that a few of us need to heal. That's what that tells us. You see, there are some basic reasons why the human race created religion, and probably the most popular reason is to find the answer to the question, what happens when we die, or what is more important to me, what happens when I die, okay? But an equally important question seems to be, why are we here? And the obvious question that precedes that one is, where did we come from? Not only are we curious about where we came from, we also want to know where the world came from, who or what created it, how long is it going to last, and why does it look the way it does. These are all questions that have challenged mystics and philosophers and scientists ever since we realized that there's more to us and more to the world than meets the eye. Now, personally, I have to tell you, I don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about these kind of questions, because even though there are a lot of theories about what the answer to each one of these questions is, there's no way for us to tell which answer is right, if any, or which one's wrong. The real problem that we have brought upon ourselves with this way of thinking is that we don't call these theories about the afterlife and the nature of the world, we call them religions. We call them religions. And in the last 5,000 years or so, there have been more people killed because of which theory they believed or didn't believe than for any other reason in history, and that has got to stop. That's why I think we do ourselves a great disservice when we try to figure out absolute answers to these questions. Because the only thing that really, really matters spiritually, not religiously, is how we treat one another and how we treat ourselves in the here and now. Because if we get that part down, if we do that right, by which I mean if we learn how to treat each other and ourselves with love, compassion, respect, kindness, all those things that we know we should be doing, then we will demonstrate the spiritual understanding that we're all here for the same reason, that's first, and we will show the universe that we are ready to move to the next step of our spiritual evolution, whatever that looks like and wherever it happens to be. That's why this morning I want to talk about one of those theories, not just a specific one, but a general category of them. I'm going to talk about creation stories. Because every religion, every philosophy, every culture has its own version of how the world began and how human beings showed up on the earth. Now, some of these stories from our Western perspective sound very strange, while some of them are actually quite beautiful. But the one thing all creation stories have in common is that no one was there to see it happen except the creator. They all have that in common, that hypothetical being who supposedly set it all in motion. Now, most, if not all, of these stories have a mythological basis instead of a scientific basis, because mythology was all that our ancestors had. They didn't have telescopes to look at the stars, which is why they thought the stars were just the holes to heaven, and they didn't have microscopes to study the building blocks of nature. But what they did have that we seem to be missing is a deep desire to know where they came from, an almost childlike view of the world around them, and a vivid imagination to explain how it all came about. And once they set that imagination in motion based on whatever customs or natural surroundings they were familiar with, the stories that they created took on a life of their own. And they were passed down from generation to generation to generation, often by word of mouth. There was frequently nothing written until history and mythology became virtually inseparable. People in the desert would have desert stories going back as far as they could remember. People who lived on islands would have stories of how the island emerged from the sea back in the distant past. People who lived in the jungle would tell stories of animal gods who turned into human beings before time began. But even when these stories eventually conflicted with new scientific evidence showing them to be impossible, which always happened eventually, these stories still remained in the hearts and minds of a large segment of the population because there was something about them, there was something in these stories that touched a deep mystical part of their inner being. That's why, as hard as it may be to believe, in the 21st century, an estimated 40% of Americans, including one of our major candidates, gosh darn it, claim to believe that the Earth is only 8,000 years old. That's why. Now, these people are not dumb. They just have a need to believe in something that fits their spiritual beliefs, or else their spiritual beliefs fall apart, and they aren't ready for that. That's why we, in a teaching like this that honors all beliefs, the common element of all these great stories, that's why we need to understand that there are still a lot of people in the world who will give up science before they give up their own spiritual beliefs. Because they believe that when the two of them conflict, when science and spirituality conflict, that they have to choose what they think is the answer that God wants. But without taking sides and without criticizing anyone else's beliefs, because there's no benefit in that, let me tell you this. The best spiritual solution is always to find a truth that fits both science and spirituality. And that is what this teaching is. Science may show us the facts in the outer worlds and explain them with reason and logic and experimentation, but the real meaning behind those facts has to include the deeper awareness that we have that flows through what we call our heart and our soul. It's like music. Scientifically speaking, the notes that we hear are vibrations that can be written down in a specific way, in a specific order, but the power of the music when we hear it comes not from the notes, but it comes from what it awakens in us that can't be measured. In the same way, the many different stories of creation should not be just analyzed or explained or criticized from a purely literal or historical perspective. Instead, they should be seen and understood and appreciated for their wisdom and for what they tell us about ourselves. Because that's what they tell us. They tell us about ourselves. That is where their value lies. Now, the creation story that most of us here are familiar with, and I'm not going to go into this at very great length at all, is a story told in Genesis, in the Torah, or what many of us have learned to call the Old Testament. This is the story that is common to the Jewish, Christian, and Muslim faiths, the people of the book. Of course, if you read the first two chapters of Genesis, which you may not have done in a while, David talked about this in his class, if you go back through, you find out that there are actually two different creation stories, one in chapter 1 and a different one in chapter 2. I won't go into it, but you can check it out if you want. But if you go online and you Google creation stories, not just Christian or Jewish, but creation stories in general, or you go on Amazon.com and you order any one of thousands of different books on mythology and religion, what you will also discover is that a lot of the details of the first part of the Genesis story, the first 7 days, so to speak, are similar, if not identical, to the creation stories told by different cultures all over the world, some of them taking place even before the story in Genesis. In the Hindu creation story, for example, of which there are several because Hinduism is a very broad faith, it talks about how Brahman, who was the creator, assumed different bodies during his meditation, and from each of his bodies that he created came different things. He created a body made out of darkness, and night was formed. He created a body made out of goodness and light, and that's how the day was formed. He created a body made of thought, their words, and from that body, thinking beings were born, the human race. He took on many different bodies, and from each one of these bodies came the snakes and then the birds and the plants and all the different parts of the world. Then there's another Hindu story that tells how Brahman was lonely because he was the only thing that existed, which makes perfect sense. I'd be lonely too, I guess. So what he did is he decided to create a physical world, but to do so, he had to take on physical form. So he took on physical form, and he split the body that he had, and when he split it, guess what he had? He had male and female, and they joined together and created the human race. Then the female said, you know, maybe we shouldn't be doing this because we're the same being. So guilt was formed. You know, that had to come in early. So she broke away and she eluded the male. She turned into a cow, but he turned into a bull, and that's how the race of cattle were formed. Then she turned into a mare, and he turned into a stallion, and the horses were formed, and she turned into plants and all the different beings, and that is how they all came to life. Kind of cool, isn't it? It's kind of an interesting story. Now, not every creation story has a single male creator. In New Zealand, the Maori tribe, very, very ancient, they said that the earth was back, actually born from two eternal gods, Mother Earth and Father Sky. There are other stories that said the creator was female, like Gaia, the earth goddess. Some stories don't have a creator at all. The land simply emerged from the sea and the people arrived and they don't even explain how it showed up. And then there's Buddhism, which I love because Buddhism doesn't even have a creation story. In fact, the Buddha said there is no creator God. We create our universe through karma, all of us individually. Very, very interesting. But to me, the most beautiful stories of all come from the African and the Native American creative stories. There's a story from Madagascar in Africa about the creator sitting and watching his beautiful daughter one day playing, making these little dolls out of clay, and the creator thought they were so beautiful that he picked them up and breathed life into them, and they became the human race, and his daughter became Mother Earth. Very, very nice story. In the Yoruba tradition of Western Africa, the earth was actually created by one of the lesser assistant gods. They told him, go do something, and he created the entire earth in 4 days with one day off, you know. That was an assistant, and he did better than Yahweh, so, you know, kind of impressive. Now, some of the Native American stories talk about a hole in the earth where the people and the animals came out to escape the demons from below and populated the Middle Earth, while other stories talk about people who came down from the gods, came down from the sky to populate the earth. Many of the stories are extremely detailed. Some of them have a large cast of characters forming the earth out of them, a whole family of gods and goddesses. All the stories are amazing, but the question here is, what are these stories actually saying, and why should we be interested in what they're telling us? Because aren't they just superstition from pre-scientific civilizations? And the answer, which I'm going to expand upon in just a few minutes, is that these stories are not telling us where we came from or where the world came from. They are telling us where our life is coming from. Or, to be more precise, they are telling us why our life is the way it is now and what it could be like in the future if we would only listen to the wisdom that they're trying to tell us. You see, each one of these stories is not about some god or gods who created the world. They are about the process of creation, period. They are about the process of creation. And the process of creation is not just some single event that happened a long time ago. It's something that happens again and again and again every single day, every single moment in our daily life. And this is not because there's something special about us. It is simply because creation is the natural process of intelligence and life coming together, and we are an expression of both. We are an expression of life and intelligence. Everything that exists, everything, past, present, or future, has a beginning and an end. It comes from consciousness. It exists as long as it is supported by consciousness. And when that consciousness shifts, that which previously existed either changes or it disappears. that is the way life works. That's the way it works in the world at large, and that's the way it works in our own individual lives. Dr. Holmes writes this, Dr. Ernest Holmes, the founder of this teaching, for those of you who may be new, he says this, it's four or five sentences. He says, creation is always beginning but never ending. The slightest thought of intelligence sets power in motion through the law, producing a corresponding thing. And then he says, things may come and things may go, but creation goes on forever. This is indeed a wonderful concept, for it means that there will always be a manifestation of divine ideas. There will always be a manifestation of divine ideas. Those divine ideas come into the world through us. They come in through us. Whatever our spiritual practice happens to be, one of the greatest spiritual lessons that we need to learn is that nothing is ever fixed or permanent. Everything changes. The only question is, are we going to have a say in how that change occurs? Are we going to make a conscious decision about what stays or what goes in our life, or what the final result of our life is going to look like? Are we going to do that? Or are we going to decide, as so many of us do, by default? Are we going to let circumstances create us? Are we going to let our past define us? Are we going to let other people direct or control us? The answer depends upon whether we see ourselves as the creator or the thing being created. Or another way of saying it is, we are powerful by nature, but we are powerless by choice. We are powerful beings by our nature, but when we are powerless by choice. We have to remember that the world that we see is an effect, and like it or not, our consciousness is creating it. Now, if things are going well, we're usually okay with that. If I like what's going on, I'll take credit. I don't mind doing that. But sometimes the world feels empty or meaningless. And sometimes our world looks like it's completely out of control. Have you read the paper lately or seen what's going on? In either case, what we've got to know is that it doesn't need to stay that way. You know, something interesting I noticed when I was reading all these different creation stories, which I have done for years, not just for this talk, but it's that every single story starts out with either a void or chaos. It starts out with nothing waiting for something to happen, or it starts out with chaos waiting for order to appear. But in the midst of the void and in the midst of the chaos, in every case, there is intelligence. We call it God in the stories, whatever we call it. The emptiness is not intelligent. The chaos is not intelligent. Only the consciousness that exists in the midst of it all is intelligent. That is what creates out of the void. We are that intelligence in the midst of the chaos, but we have to act intelligently in order to create an intelligent result. So let's talk about what constitutes an intelligent act for a spiritual being who has divine intelligence as part of our nature. One of the first things that this intelligence does in many of these stories is to differentiate between things. It begins to create light from the darkness. It creates light where darkness existed. It creates light first so that it can see what's really going on. If all we see around us in our life or in the world is darkness and confusion, the light that we need to create first of all is the light of awareness. The light of awareness. We need to look at whatever it is we're dealing with and start separating things. Start separating the land from the water. Start separating the lies from the truth. Separating the fear from the faith. Separating the complicated from the simple. Look what's going on in the news in the world today. Can we bring light to that darkness? Can we look at the so-called financial meltdown and still see abundance? Can we look at the war and still see peace? Can we look at the presidential election and still see cooperation? Can we do that? Now, we may not be able to see those things out there in the news, but we don't have to. Not at first. In the beginning, notice how I worked that in? Okay. In the beginning, We only need to see those things in here, in our consciousness. So here's the question. Can we stand in the midst of the chaos that surrounds us and say, with perfect calm, perfect faith, and perfect divine knowing, let there be light? Can we do that right here and right now? If we can't, we will never be able to create anything better than what we have created so far. Now, another theme that's common to all these creation stories is the part where the Creator intends to create a perfect world, but something goes wrong. Somebody eats an apple that they aren't supposed to eat. Somebody fools around with somebody they're not supposed to fool around with. That's what some of them do. Some angel goes bad and tries to take control, kind of a corporate takeover thing, you know. Even God gets surprised every now and then, I'm sure. This is not meant to say that things never turn out right. Instead, the meaning of this is that we, or God, can't always control the results. We can only control our part of the creative process. But if we do that much, if we stay centered and we focus on the truth, even if things don't turn out exactly the way we anticipated, they can still turn out just fine. Just fine. For example, if we choose to give our heart to someone, like Lina was talking about, and they end up breaking our heart, which is not what she was talking about, the lessons that we learn from that relationship can actually make our next relationship that much better, can make them that much better. Someone once said that true success comes only from maintaining our enthusiasm during our failures. That's pretty profound. It really, really is. From the perspective of a perfect intelligence, a creative intelligence, there are no wrong decisions. There are only decisions. There are only choices we make that lead to results, and the results always lead to new choices that will create new results. That is where our creative power lies. Now, one final part of these creation stories, and we could talk about this all day, but there are just a few things here. One final part in all of these stories is the principle of sacrifice. A beautiful Indian princess will jump into the water and give up her life in the water so that the fish can feed her people. That's part of their creation story with one of the Native American tribes. Or a young chieftain, a handsome man, shed his blood and allows himself to be buried in the earth so that the maize, the corn, can come up to feed his people. Another one of the stories. Before you start cringing when you hear the word sacrifice, this is not about sacrifice in the old religious sense of the word. Sacrifice simply means giving up something we value for something that we value more. That's all it is. The most powerful spiritual sacrifice that we can ever make is to be willing to sacrifice our old beliefs for new and greater beliefs. And that may sound like a duh, that's not too hard to do, but I assure you it is not easy at all, because sometimes we have to give up the old before we can see what's coming next, before we can see what's coming next. Of course, sometimes, even though we're afraid, you know, Paul said this will be okay, so I'm going to step forward and do this, all right? Don't blame it on me. I didn't do it. We go ahead and we sacrifice. We sacrifice our comfort. We sacrifice the illusion of safety and security and control. We even sacrifice our old familiar surroundings. But what appears soon after doesn't look at all like we hoped it was going to look. And that's not a real good feeling. We have to remember here that creation is an ongoing evolutionary process. Both we and the world are always in the state of becoming. We say that we are being. We are not just being. We are being, creating, which is becoming. As we create new things in our life, we need to continually release all the old things that do not serve us, no matter what comes next, just like our body releases and sheds old cells as a child so that it can become an adult. If you think about that catchy little New Thought metaphysical saying, it's been around for a while, today is the first day of the rest of your life. Have you ever heard that? It's so cute, isn't it? But if you add right before it, this moment is the first moment of the rest of your day, and this day is the first day of the rest of your life, you start to get an idea of what it means to be the creator in our own universe. Everything that happens from this moment on in our experience is completely unformed. It is pure possibility. You may have stuff written down for this week, but it has not happened yet. Everything happening from this moment on is pure, undifferentiated possibility, just like it was in the beginning, before those so-called first 7 days in Genesis. And the intelligence that exists in us now is the same intelligence that existed then, because it has always been infinite and it never, ever changes. So anything is possible from this moment on, but we have to stop waiting for something outside of us to create it. In fact, if each and every one of us makes the conscious decision to do what we are able to do, which is to create all things new, to create health and wealth and love and peace and joy and all those things, if we do that, then we will be able to look back on what we have created and to say, it is good. And then just like God, we can take the rest of the week off. Because it is good, and so are you, and so am I, and so it is. So it is. Thank you. Oh, thank you. Thank you. All right, let's take a few moments. Thank you. Take a few moments, relax. Take a breath or two. Let's give ourselves the gift of our own attention, our own awareness, focusing on the presence of spirit, not just in us, but functioning in the world through us and as us. We are joined with this spirit. We are sparks of the divine fire. We are the gift of life to itself, and life is the gift that we accept and share with others. We recognize that God is present wherever we are, but we do not have to seek it out. It knows who and what we are because we are what it is. We know that spirit is always present. It supports us completely. It works through law. And as we recognize it, honor it, and use it intelligently, our life begins to reflect the presence of spirit in the world. We do this in our own life. We do this with every person we meet. We do this even with people we don't know, honoring and respecting them for the spiritual beings that they are, and moving forward in life, creating the best that life has to offer in everything we do. As each one of us moves forward with an awareness of the presence of God, the presence of Spirit in the world, we know we will be moving in the right direction. Our life will begin to show it. As we join with others, our lives together will begin to show it until the world reflects it, which is why we are here. We are constantly creating the life we live, but we are able to create it from the presence of Spirit rather than the presence of chaos and confusion. This is our truth. I invite you now to spend a few moments in the silence of your own heart and mind, all of us together in this one silent space, recognizing yourself as an individual expression of this creative power, as one part of the power that is creating life in the world. Take these few moments for yourself. With gratitude for this awareness and a clear understanding of its sacred significance in our life, we accept this truth as our own. We embrace it, we give it, we receive it, we share it. We honor the presence of spirit in every single person, and we use our God-given intelligence and our ability to create life in the greatest way we know. This is our truth, and we release it into consciousness. Our intent goes forward, our word goes forward, and returns to us with the spirit in which we sent it. And so it is.